The World Tomorrow. Ambassador College presents Garner Ted Armstrong, bringing you the plain truth about today's world news and the prophecies of the world tomorrow.
And greetings, friends around the world. This is Garner Ted Armstrong with the good news of the world tomorrow. This modern world of technology, designed to make life more livable, is liable to end up making it absolutely impossible. You're living in a rapidly changing age, and present trends continuing, it will be even more frightening in the next two decades. And I'm not talking about communism, Vietnam, or race riots. I'm talking about pollution. Pollution of our water, of our air, our mountains, lakes, rivers, and streams, our countryside, and pollutions of our bodies and our minds. Now, is there any solution to pollution? Can it be reversed? Is there any course you can take or civic-minded public officials can take that is going to solve the massive problem of pollution, especially in our major population centers? But pollution is so widespread and so worldwide today, it isn't just occurring in Los Angeles or London. I was talking recently of the problems in big cities, of the overcrowding, of population explosions, of dangerous racial conditions with growing ghettos, unrest, and violence. And since that broadcast, attention has once again been focused on the growing problems of pollution in our nations. I had occasion to be up on the Continental Divide of the United States, up at about 10,000 feet of altitude. The air was clean and pure, but all the trees were dead. But while I was there, we heard over the radio that Los Angeles was suffering terrible heat, over 100 degrees on some days, and the worst smog attack, apparently, in all of their history. Now, London's smog and fog is known worldwide. London is famous for it. So is Los Angeles. Paris and Rome are a toss-up with London for monstrous traffic jams. Houston is well known for murder. New York blacked out along with 30 million citizens deprived of electrical power. Was thinking here not so long ago about the utter dependence on a highly technical, artificial, and vulnerable society for the necessities of life. And how such a little thing can suddenly throw your entire life out of kilter. You heard about the little boy, didn't you? It was reported over a major network news program who was walking along with a stick against a picket fence, as little boys will. And he came to a lamppost and he took his stick and hit it. And just as he did, that massive fuse blew out and the lights went out over several states, throwing 30 million people into darkness. And the little fella said, "No, I didn't really mean it. I didn't really mean it." Apparently, he thought he'd done all of that. But it sort of underlines the problems of today of this highly involved, technical civilization of ours that at the same time is so absolutely vulnerable. Now, what are we doing to ourselves? Well, meanwhile, even though it's being widely published around the world about the massive traffic jams, the overcrowding, the crime, the racial ghettos, all the other problems of our big population centers, people continue day in, day out to rush to the cities in spite of all of the advice to the contrary, because they think that's where the money is. Now, what about you? If you live in the country, I've got good advice for you. If you possibly can, stay there. But the trouble with it is, a lot of people aren't going to heed that advice. Now, changes of great importance are occurring. It's time you realize what they are and realize what it means, what it signifies for you in the future. Those changes are occurring in the makeup of the United States population. This is also true in England. It's also true along the valleys of the Ruhr. It's true in Italy, especially, where the big population centers continue to expand and become overcrowded. People are continually pushing into the big city areas everywhere, and the suburbs, as a result, are expanding further and further into the countryside. And with a growing population increasingly crowding into big city areas, problems multiply. What are they? Race problems, transportation problems, delivery and supply problems to get the foodstuffs in and the waste out. And these problems multiply many, many times over. Tax problems, school problems, crime problems, problems of air and water pollution. Yet people seem to rush toward the cities. And then they try to spread out from the cities to get away from the cities and the complexities of city life. And in consequence, it is the problem of cities, not farm problems or foreign problems, that are now looming, believe it or not, as the great problems of America for the future. In the United States, half of all Americans will be living in three major metropolitan areas by 1985. One of those areas is along the East Coast from Boston through Washington, D.C. Another is the Great Lakes region stretching from Buffalo, New York through Chicago. The third major area is on the West Coast reaching from San Francisco through Los Angeles. Today, about 83 million people, about 43% of all Americans, live in those three strip cities, as they're being called. And, said U.S. News, by 1985, according to latest projections, 125 million people, or one half of all Americans, will be living in these three major metropolitan areas. Now, a man from New York said of Los Angeles that in the past, politicians and economists have lagged in their response to public pressure, and they're doing so again. This man is a Harvard University economist, and he said, as in the 30s, the world faced an economic crisis, so now it faces a crisis of urban growth. Pure air and water, once rather elementary aspects of the average living standard, are becoming increasingly scarce. So is space for recreation. The American urban environment is, with rare exceptions, he said, scabrous in the extreme. We still measure accomplishment by out-of-date indices. If the gross national product shows adequately that it's growing and unemployment declines, well, we think that's success. It's hard to suppose that Western man, he said, stalled in the ultimate traffic jam and slowly succumbing to carbon monoxide, will be especially enchanted to hear from the last survivor that in the preceding year, gross national product went up by a record amount. Do you think that's a far-out idea? Do you think that's a way-out interpretation? That sounds impossible to you, does it? Well, listen to the CRASH program to combat pollution, a greatly expanded effort that is going to combat pollution, we hope, in all of the 50 states. And this was being urged by a study group of the President's Science Advisory Committee. The report that they stressed was this: the pollution of the air from internal combustion engines is so serious and is growing so fast that an alternative, non-polluting means of powering automobiles, buses, and trucks is likely to become a national necessity. Carbon dioxide is being added to the Earth's atmosphere by the burning of coal, oil, and natural gas at the rate of 6 billion tons a year. And by the year 2000, just taking a simple mathematical curve and projecting it forward, there will be about 25% more carbon dioxide in our atmosphere than now. This will modify the heat balance of the atmosphere to such an extent that marked changes in climate, not controllable through local or even national efforts, could occur. This was not some wild way-out pulp novel, incidentally, but the U.S. News and World Report. It wasn't a wildly sensational group of people who were doing it with long beards who were against almost everything but a presidential committee. Now we're being told in Los Angeles that worst siege of smog in years showed that this city is a long way from solving any air pollution problems. 4 million automobiles in the Los Angeles area daily burn 8 million gallons of gasoline and spew more than 13,000 tons of pollutants into the air. I remember in a basic speech class a few years ago, one of our students had taken the average number of smokers. He'd found these statistics, just one little tiny aspect of it, in one large city like Los Angeles, the average number of cigarettes that were consumed, for example. Now, I happen to know what clouds of cigarette smoke will do to a small room, because I used to smoke myself for about 8 years, as a matter of fact, but that's now been 12 or 13 years ago. I'm very thankful, and maybe by this time my lungs are no longer black like they probably used to be. But he measured one cigarette and just divided this into the average number of packs that people smoked, and then divided that, of course, or multiplied it by the number of people who were smoking in Los Angeles, and came up with one giant cigarette. Maybe, you know, a quarter of a mile across or something like this. And with a great, big, huge bellows fanning this thing with billowing clouds of smoke. Now, literally, if you were to do this, if you were to take all the cigarettes smoked by people in Los Angeles and pile them together in one huge pile and light them all in one area, you wouldn't want to be within miles of it, even if you loved the smoke. It would just choke you nearly to death. Well, you can add that one little tiny factor. And is it so tiny? You get into a jet and you wonder, well, I wish they would pull that mask down, even whether I need it or not. You wonder about wearing a gas mask on with you, because the moment the little sign goes out, well, you hear the clicking of lighters, and pretty soon you're sitting here being asphyxiated. Well, 13,000 tons of pollutants into the air is not just a small amount. That doesn't even begin to cover industry or cigarettes, as I said, and all the other incidentals, but it does cover automobile pollutants alone. Now, according to smog experts, 80% of all air pollution comes from automobiles. Until these fumes can be controlled, they say, Los Angeles is destined to retain its smog. Now, through necessity, because of the work because of this program, because of the Plain Truth magazine we send out absolutely free of charge, I am pretty well chained to a desk where I am required to stay a good portion of the time in the L.A. Basin. If it weren't for this work, and a lot of people use an excuse, they think that's the reason they stay, but if it weren't for what I'm doing, I wouldn't be here. Now, with all due respect to the government officials and to the various chambers of commerce and to all the nice things that are available in the Los Angeles Basin, things like marine land, Disneyland, and the mountains and the ocean and all the rest of it, I still wouldn't be here. I might want to visit once in a while. But I would try to cooperate by removing my automobile from the area so as to not to add my little bit to the smog, because I drive an automobile too. Now, at present, a canopy of poisoned air, you can see it if you've ever flown over the area, is spread nearly 250 miles from Santa Barbara all the way northwest of Los Angeles to the Mexican border. I have driven into California from Arizona and begun to see traces of smog in the air at Blythe. I have flown in and I've seen it lying heavy now, even around the corner of the big mountain, right over the top of Palm Springs. Now even Palm Springs is starting to suffer a little bit from Los Angeles smog, when before you could always escape to the desert. Now you can't escape. Many families have made various expensive moves only to find out that they're there a few months and all of a sudden here's smog. It's grown right out where they moved to. Smog not only is unpleasant, it's not only a health hazard, but it's costly. If you were raising crops in the area, you would find it's being blamed for $132 million damage yearly. Now, it's getting so bad, and is such a constant threat to life, that a New York specialist has recommended that Los Angeles establish emergency treatment centers for smog victims. Here we are in our modern, complex, technological society, choking ourselves to death on our automobiles and all of our various modern gadgets we think are going to make us happier. The man was Dr. S.M. Ayers. He's director of the Cardiopulmonary Laboratory at St. Vincent's Hospital in New York, and he said persons suffering from respiratory diseases are in constant danger from smog. He said special centers with humidified, filtered, clean air should be manned round the clock by trained medical personnel. Dr. R.H. Smart, who is clinical professor of medicine at USC, testified at the trial that persons with respiratory diseases improved when placed in smog-free rooms after breathing Los Angeles air. Now, maybe that doesn't interest people living out in the country, but it is better because it's going to affect where you live as well, and there are other pollutions I want to tell you about that are already affecting where you live. You can take, for example, what's happening out in the countryside. There are a lot of lake lovers in Michigan and Wisconsin, and they're not doing much better than people in Los Angeles, London, Sydney, or Tokyo are. Now, there are more than 60,000 lakes in those two states alone. They've been spared a lot of the outright pollution, like raw sewage being dumped into them, pollution as the form of industrial waste. But a more subtle form has been creeping into those lakes. It's called nutrient pollution. It seeps into the lakes from septic tanks of lake-fronting cottages or from fertilizers that drain off lawns and farmlands. And this brand of pollution does one of two things. It feeds algae and weeds until they turn the lakes into a marsh, or it kills off the fish and other plant growth by, of course, absorbing all the oxygen out of the lake. Either way, of course, it wrecks your lake, doesn't it? It was described by some as a sort of a thin green paint. In Washington, a report came, and this was reported in some of the national syndicated columns, that some beaches had been closed because algae were coating swimmers' bodies and even piling up in evil-smelling windrows on the shoreline of some of the large lakes. A Public Health Service pollution expert had found that a glass of water taken from the central basin of Lake Erie looked like thin green paint. It was so filled with pollution. Now, ironically, the most troublesome pollutant is phosphate, a valuable fertilizer on land that stimulates plant growth just as effectively in water. It rains into the lake, algae begins to grow, and the lake is ruined. We have a beautiful stream coursing down part of the grounds of Ambassador College. We found, just about the same way other people find these things, that our fish all died on us one time. We had some beautiful trout in there, and every last one of them died. We wondered why. Well, we got to checking. We found that some of the fellas out to the side door of the dining hall had been scouring out the garbage cans when they had dumped the garbage in the trucks that came to pick them up, and they'd been keeping them nice and clean, as was their habit. They'd been doing it with wire brushes and hoses and brooms and whatnot, but also they'd been using various soaps and detergents.
And those soaps and detergents, of course, dissipated and lay in the ground. But the trouble is, they aren't consumed. They are residual. They weren't completely, you know, non-susceptible to bacteria, that's for sure. So the bacteria in the earth and the air weren't going to gradually consume them, which is normal with any average organic-type waste. So they lie there. Months and months they lay there, and then along comes a rain, and the rain dribbles little muddy riblets into the stream, and the stream takes in all of the terrible, harsh soaps that were lying there in the soil. So all the fish died. Well, when we found what was happening, we moved the area where they were washing. But, you know, this is happening around the world, in all countries, as far as that's concerned, where we are killing off our wildlife. Now, you take Sweden. The Swedes on Sunday walks are strolling along, but they see dying hawks and owls and even eagles, and they take them to local veterinary stations for help. But usually, as it turns out, it's too late, and they find now it's mercury poisoning. Most countries are recognizing and saying a little bit about the dangers of insecticides, but, of course, farmers still continue to use them. Large moneyed interests still continue to use them. Wildlife still dies out. Sometimes the entire quail crop of a state is destroyed, as occurred in the southeastern United States a few years ago. Wildlife is found completely asphyxiated from all the smog and the choking pollutants we put in the air. Or we find that wildlife dies because of insecticide eaten by birds, which in turn are eaten by other birds. This is what is happening in Sweden, or like is not eaten by man. Now, they have found these various predator-type birds, such as hawks and owls, are dying because they are eating other birds which have been feeding on Swedish crops. And Swedish farmers are using seed prepared with mercury, and birds like pigeons and finches are feeding on the seeds. Mercury, however, unlike a lot of other poisons, cannot be eliminated from the organism. It's stored up in body tissues. So as the birds store it up, they've got massive doses just short of lethal. All it takes is one hawk to eat two or three of them, and he's got three lethal doses, so he dies. And the dying birds are being picked up. Now, a zoologist, Robert Nilsson, and another man, Dr. Gustav Rosen, who was a specialist in radiation biology, put aside all their other research and all their other work and concentrated only on pollution of food by mercury. And their principal discovery was that practically all hen's eggs produced in the entire nation of Sweden contain it. Two eggs a day, according to their calculations, are enough to give a human being the maximum dose of mercury allowed by UN agency standards. And that's just a yardstick of measurement that signals danger. 15 years ago, there was a falcon, the peregrine falcon. It used to be common over Sweden. Today, it's all but disappeared. Mercury poisoning has been shown to be the only cause of that falcon's disappearance. If it did not kill the birds outright, it made their eggs sterile. It's also been responsible for the near extermination of the white-tailed eagle, which used to be quite common along the Swedish coast. About 10 years ago, between 50 and 60 little eaglets hatched. But unfortunately, vested interests are so strong that little has been done to control the danger. Money wins again. Money wins out over wildlife every time. Money wins out over your very environment, the food you eat, and the water you drink, and the air you breathe, and the entertainment that's available to you, and the novels and the literature you can buy, and what you're able to hear and see and go and do. Money wins out every time. Now, orthodox agricultural scientists play down the dangers of mercury-bearing fungicides. They say human beings don't eat birds of prey, so it's quite an acceptable situation. Logical reasoning, isn't it? But in fact, pigeons and pheasants have dangerous amounts of mercury, and both are frequently eaten, and up to 500 times the maximum allowed by the World Health Organization has been found in captured specimens. Now, from Toronto in Canada, it was reported that antibiotics and pesticides being used widely and wildly in food is becoming an increasing worry to doctors up there, and this was the Ontario Hospital Association. The antibiotics and pesticides are getting into animal systems and showing up in the human body. And Dr. Harding Larish of the University of Toronto Epidemiology and Biometrics Department addressed the dietetic section of the association and listed these dangers, and they are as follows. Autopsies on humans have revealed DDT in body fat, showing that we are permeated with the stuff. Most meat is infected with Salmonella, a bacteria, which caused an outbreak of food poisoning in Canada recently. Now, the doctor suggested that hospital bacteriologists examine swabs taken from both fresh and cooked meat, particularly poultry, and said you would be surprised at what you would find. He recommended thorough cooking of leftovers as well as meats and custards. I am not an advocate of the underdone steak, he said, because it could be dangerous. Now, Vice Admiral Rickover, is a name that has appeared often in the news, and Vice Admiral Rickover warned against uncontrolled exploitation of science that may become a Frankenstein monster destroying its creator, man. He listed a number of misuses of new technology, including one that may be irreparable. And he said, and I quote, "We may be damaging the atmosphere permanently by changing its chemical composition. Yes, we are polluting our very environment in which we live." Listen to some of these shocking statements the Admiral made. He is director, remember, of the development of nuclear engines for ships and submarines, and said technology used for quick private profit rather than long-range public good is resulting in these things. Deep-sea fishing techniques capable of destroying all commercial fish in the seas. Now, man has always looked upon the oceans of the world as a vast, untapped wilderness of fantastic source of food. Already, some of the great whales are close to extinction, and whalers are paying no attention to the warnings of some of the wildlife experts who are telling them it's going to happen. Now, next, the Admiral said indiscriminate dumping of poisonous wastes that have turned rivers and lakes into sewers and polluted soil, water, and air. Then he listed wholesale slaughter of wild animals and the upsetting of natural balances with consequences we can't even fathom as yet. He talked about strip mining practices that turn once green regions into a desolate lunar-type landscape. He cited overuse of pesticides and weed killers capable of poisoning soils, crops, birds, animals, fish, and eventually man. Now, he said, in other words, technology which was designed to make life easier is ending up by making it impossible. And what is the greatest pollution of all? The greatest pollution of all, according to a recent newspaper in the United States, is the pollution of men's minds. Pollution of air and water is bad enough. Pollution of our food is bad enough. Pollution of our lakes and rivers and mountains and streams. This is bad enough. But another great menace today is the pornographic garbage being dumped into America's and Britain's and Australia's and South Africa's moral streams. It is said that more than 15 million copies of various girly-type magazines are bought every month in the United States. In a year's time, 3 billion copies of all kinds of pornographic publications. That's enough to fill to overflowing 5 Empire State Buildings are purchased by adults and teenagers. It's also reported that the sale of salacious magazines is 20 times that of all religious publications, and that includes Protestant, Catholic, and Jew combined. And the National Citizens for Decent Literature say that 75 to 90% of all pornographic literature ends up in the hands and therefore in the minds of little children. It's quite a world, isn't it? Quite a world in which you live. You think these aren't facts? They are. You're living with them. Most of you are living in big cities and you see it all the time. Our great, big, crowded cities with all the attendant problems of growing tension and worry, of people trying to live fast and make a fast buck and get out fast who aren't doing any of those things successfully. Marriage is falling apart. Crime is mounting. Traffic jams are getting bigger. And we are so vulnerable in our cities because, after all, we still eat foods that come out of the ground and we still have to breathe clean air to live and we still have to have right and normal health and a balanced mind if we're going to be happy and successful. Yet we are creating a false and a technological society, which, while we believe it is giving us more of the things that go to make life easier and more pleasant and give us more pastimes and more fun, more of the enjoyable pursuits that everyone seems to desire, yet it is making our very environment uninhabitable and unpleasant along with it while we choke ourselves to death on our own smoke. Well, what is going to happen? Where are we headed? My friends, do you realize that present trends continuing, we are headed for one of the most gigantic, climactic collapses that has ever occurred to any people? Do you realize the time is ripe when gigantic disease epidemics are going to hit our people, when consumptive diseases unprecedented, unparalleled in the memory of man are going to sweep our nations? Do you realize the race riots of the future could well be so fantastic that you would be hearing of hundreds of thousands of people dead? Do you realize we are headed toward a grand smash climax of the close of an age? Do you really realize the times in which you are living? Are you aware of the tremendous changes occurring all around you, all the time, day in and day out? You're still human. You're still an earthbound creature dependent upon this earth for your sustenance every single day. You've still got to eat food and drink water. You've still got to breathe air to survive just like any other human creature. Now, this is just one part of the problem. The last time I said, in commenting about the prophecies of Jesus Christ of Nazareth, that he was predicting our day, that he was talking about our times, that he was portraying our world the way it would become today, and then finally telling us what the solutions would be, and about the happy world the way it is going to be in the future, of how it would all come out, of how we would finally learn some mighty important lessons, of how we would find a rehabilitated world of peace and plenty, a world where overcrowding will not be allowed, a world where we will not poison ourselves to death by our own technology. But first, he said, there were going to come several major, overall, worldwide events that you could see, you could read of, you could hear, they would be happening all around you. He said the very first thing you could see happening would be a lot of false prophets, a lot of odd ideas, a lot of weird doctrines, and a lot of strange theologies. That's what he said. He said there would come many saying he was the Christ and would deceive many. Then he said you would be hearing of wars and rumors of wars. And then he said there would be famines and pestilences and earthquakes in diverse places. This is back in Matthew 24. Now millions of people are professing Christians. But how many people ever pay any attention to what Christ said? How many know Jesus Christ was a prophet? How many know he predicted our days? He talked about our giant problems of this time. How many know that he predicted the near future? How many know that he predicted he was going to return to this earth? Now, you're welcome to any opinion and idea you have about the Bible, of course. That's your privilege. But what does the Bible say? Jesus predicted we were going to enter into an era that is called in the Bible a great tribulation, a time where even wildlife was going to go crazy, a time where our earth would become dried up and we would be in the midst of great droughts, a time when the very elements would seem to be against us, a time of the pollution of our lands, a time of the complete desecration and desolation of our countries. We are about as ripe for that time as we have ever been. In every facet of our societies, from the complex life of our big, thickly crowded, polluted, technologically advanced cities, to the dying, decaying, waste areas of our countryside, we are getting ripe for just what Jesus said. You need to write for these articles and booklets on Does God Exist? The proof of the Bible. Can you trust what Jesus said? Can you prove he meant what he said? Is there any rhyme or reason to prophecy? Do these great events that are affecting your everyday way of life fit into any overall pattern? Or are they all just disconnected problems that have no sense and no relationship to the overall patterns in this world? Write for this article on why prophecy. Why was it written? And especially request the booklet 1975 in Prophecy. Now, they're all free of charge. There is no price for them whatsoever. There is no follow-up. You're not being asked to join anything. Request the Plain Truth magazine. Request this booklet on the United States and the British Commonwealth in prophecy. Find out where we are mentioned in the prophecies of the Bible. And then keep listening to every single World Tomorrow program and tell other people about it. Now, all you need to do is to write to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. The address is Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California. Remember, all this literature is absolutely free of charge. There is no price for it, no follow-up. Be sure to tell us the call letters of your station. And so until next time, this is Garner Ted Armstrong saying goodbye, friends.
You have heard The World Tomorrow. Send your letters to Herbert W. Armstrong, Post Office Box 111, Pasadena, California.